Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. Like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Here at Guitar Nerds, we want to make sure you have the best chance to listen to all the guitar content that's right for you. That's why we have a Patreon, patreon.com/guitar nerds. A veritable treasure trove full of interviews, mini-series, and a whole extra half an hour episode every week. patreon.com/guitar nerds. Get your nerd on. And welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Brandon, joined this week by Jake Ross.
Hello.
And Matt Knight.
Well, hello there.
That's right. Back after being away for some weeks. How many weeks were you away for?
I was, as we were talking just before the podcast, I've lost all sense of time.
Yes.
I have no idea where I am, when I am, or who I am. I've had such a mad, like, 3 or 4 weeks.
Well, yeah, it was horrible for us. It was a step back in time as well. We had to have Mark Peckham. Yeah, I know. Who? Exactly. Who? We had to have him back on the podcast, which was terrible. Don't do that again.
Yeah, I'll try not to. Yeah, I was away at a sales conference, and then I came back for 2 days, helped open up the Artist Centre. We have at Metropolis Studios now.
What Artist Centre?
It's the Roland Artist Centre at Metropolis Studios.
It's very nice, Metropolis Studios. I've been to a couple of like high end audio trade shows, I guess. There, this show Headroom, I went to a couple of times, and it's like the sort of place where you can go and listen to the like £100,000 Sennheiser Orpheus headphone amp,
and the one that starts with a key.
It's got like a
key.
I don't think it starts with a key.
The original one started with a little key. You put
a
it
key
in
of what?
And that's it's just a power. it's you put it in and that turns the power on.
Very good, Joe. Wow. No, I think the original one was like a marble block or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's something ridiculous. And the valves come out of the block, right?
Yeah, really, really weird. But $55,000, the original Orpheus.
Wow.
So, cool. And blimey. I mean, in fairness, you do get the headphones included. It's not completely outrageous, but yeah, I went to a couple of shows there. Sorry to hijack, but yeah, it's a really nice space. It's a really, really nice space.
Yeah, there's a lot of famous records. I think it's been there since the 80s. It was an old power station.
So did you manage to move? I think we asked Mark about this, but did you manage to move the wall of Boss Effects that you had at the Vans Boss event over to?
No, because we didn't actually own any of those pedals. They actually all came from the Roland US team. And that wall was the biggest headache at the event last year because it was made of Perspex. You had to lift it up in unison, both sides and from the front, and put it on straight, because you twisted it anyway, it broke.
Yeah, and the pedals weren't all secured. So by the end of the event, when it had been knocked into by enough drunk people, some of them were at angles.
Oh, we had to reset it after the Saturday night gig. We had to reset it, which was painful. I think it took about an hour to do that.
Amazing. So you were at this. So you helped launch this this new Roland Artist Center with all the gear.
Yeah, and then I was there till midnight. Fell asleep in a taxi on the way home. Woke up at 5 a.m. and travelled.
What, still in the taxi?
Yep. No.
He'd just driven you round.
He had just driven me round till 5 a.m. just because I had time to kill before I got to Heathrow, and then, you know, flew to Japan. So, yeah.
Amazing.
I spent the last 10 days in Japan.
And by the looks of it, I appreciate that a lot of that event is under embargo, so we can't talk about what was going on there. But of course, from all the Roland and the Boss Instagram and social media, you were hooking up with the finest names in sort of guitar YouTube-ness.
Yeah, yeah. It was I took Rabia, Massad, Oda England, and that pedal show out to Japan. They got to see the factory. We did a little bit of a tour. We went to the artist center. We have there like a museum, and they got to check out a bunch of stuff. Yeah, it was a really good time. And then we took them around Tokyo and took them to all the best sort of guitar buying spots. I mean, we talked about it last year and before, but Tokyo is just this weird bubble of like guitar shops, like more than anywhere else. I'm sure like there must be more guitar shops in Tokyo than probably the whole of the UK. I'm going to say that. I'm going to say that's pretty mental, but I'm going to say there's so many guitar shops. I think there's like...
Really?
Well, Shinomura Music is the biggest dealer in Japan. There's 140 stores. And Japan's not that big.
What, of that one company?
One music store, yeah.
Crikey.
And Ishibashi Music, which is like the next biggest, have four stores in Tokyo.
That's
and it's almost like GAC going, we're going to open up another store. Great, where are you going to open it? Same city, about 10 minutes down the road on the next tube stop.
Yeah, Hove.
Do you know, and it's so odd. It's so odd.
That's pretty outrageous.
There's so much competition. And I mean, you know, music shops also that sell woodwind and brass. And we walked in one and they only sold vintage synthesizers. And it was just like the best collection of vintage synths I've ever seen. It was like, how Amazing. Is this a thing? And everything is just so mint condition and so perfect. Yeah, it was just great. And then on the last day,
before you move on from that, if you went to a ton of guitar shops, surely talk us through some of the gems that you. That you found?
Oh, well, that's what I was actually going to get to.
Oh, right, sorry.
So, well, the thing is, a lot of the guitar shops out there sell new stuff, and there's always a little bit of secondhand hunting, but a trip to Japan isn't complete without going to Hard Off, which I mentioned before, which is the brand of... It's their brand of cash converters, shall we say. Hard Off.
So it's like a secondhand store, a thrift store.
Yeah,
type thing,
thrift
right?
store, but everything is basically mint condition. So this particular one is massive. It has three floors. It has a tech floor, a music floor, and then a hi-fi store. Everything is secondhand. So the guitar store had two 1949 Gibson Archtops.
Wow.
What? A 58 Strat. a Gibson Flying V bass from like the 70s.
It had
a Fender Dual Showman. It had a bunch of vintage drum machines, and that was just in the vintage cabinet. There was 10, 15 Mosrites, a bunch of like Japanese built Fenders, Yamahas, loads of stuff I'd never seen before, a whole classical section that did a bunch of vintage stuff, and they have a great secondhand pedal selection. So they have a Boss cabinet just filled with secondhand Boss pedals. So I helped Dan find a couple of bits he was looking for. He wanted to get a DSD2, which is our old digital delay sampler, which is the same as an old DD3.
DSD2? I don't remember it.
It came out in 88, I think. And
okay.
It's,
really? That's
yeah.
quite... Oh,
it's basically a DD3, an old DD3, so with the big chip, but it's got a trigger input that automatically triggers the sampling section in it, which is quite cool. So if you run it out of a drum machine, or you can plug an FS5 into it and trigger off that as well.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, so it's quite cool for glitchy stuff.
That sounds awesome. I need to get that.
Yeah.
Are they rare?
They're not that rare. They're not that rare, but I'd get in quick, probably before that pedal show, do a video on it, and then suddenly everyone wants to buy one. And then the prices go up by about three times. He bought an old BF1, which was the old massive flanger.
Bass flanger.
No. You can just buy a BF3 for that. BF1 was like the old, like, big box flanger that we did in, like, 76.
Right.
Which is, like, almost like mint condition. And I was searching for a couple bits, and I found the Ibanez Fuzz, the FZ7, the 7 series.
Wait, the FZ7, is that the one that, is that from the same series as the AD9 delay?
No, it's from the same series as the DE7 delay, the lock knob series.
Oh, the lock knobs, the sort of matte chrome pedals with the lockable knobs.
This is the Fuzz, which I'm not sure what circuit it's based on, but it's got a damage control on it that goes from 0, 50 or 100% damage. It's like a little switch, and the more you turn up the damage control, the more broken the pedal sounds. yeah, it's pretty. So they had a bunch there. They had the Smashbox, which was their distortion, the Seventh Heaven, which was their high gain distortion for 7-string, and I can't remember what the other one was now. I think that might have been it. And I was like, do I buy all four? And I was like, no, I'll just buy the Fuzz.
Matt.
I know. I was going to buy all of them. I was like, I've got to take them all back. But when I was searching around, because I was searching for an old rack unit, an SDE3000, I found this tiny orange rack unit. I was like, oh, it's 5,000 yen. That's about 30 quid. I was like, oh, this looks quite cool. Don't really know much about it. And it's only about, I'd say it's not much. It's about the width of a Line 6 M5, if not slightly smaller. So it's not even half rack size. So how you're supposed to mount it, I don't actually know. By a Japanese company, and if anyone out there listening to this knows any information about it, please email us or let us know. It's by a company called Vestax, V-E-S-T-A-X. It's called the PCH1. So I did a bit of digging on it, and there was only a tiny bit that I could find about it. They were basically a company that made turntables in the 1970s, and this is an all analog chorus that uses the same like circuitry as a bunch of old choruses from the 70s, and it's got proper JRC buffer chip in it and everything, and it sounds absolutely amazing. And I plugged it in and was like, I'm definitely going to have to buy this. But I can't find any info on it. And I don't think they're not a company anymore. I think they've closed. I found one picture of the circuit board online. So I don't know if they were used for turntables or what. But it's a wicked sounding chorus pedal.
Awesome.
Well, mini rack, I guess. But yeah, it's got a foot switch in, so you can use it like a pedal. So that was an absolute cool find for 30 quid, I thought.
Yeah, I'm going for a really chorusy stage at the moment. Yeah, I went through a stage of like not having it on all the time though, because I was using so much vibrato, and now I'm like, it's fine, I can have both. Or the one I'm just leaving on at the moment and never turning off is,
Have we just driven him away?
I just went to get it. It's the Free the Tone, the Tri-Avatar.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, yeah, that's, it's absolutely bonkers. Because you can make it so subtle, and I think that's the thing that that chorus gets overused or you know, people often, everyone, no one wants to turn a control knob less than 12 o'clock. You know, people are afraid of those first.
those first notches. Few bits.
But that's where a chorus sounds best, like subtly in the mix, just thickens everything up. I'm digging the chorus at the moment. So did you buy anything else, Matty Nighty?
I did not. No, one of the other guys bought an Eric Johnson Fuzz Face, and then took a picture of the inside. It has all 8 components in it.
I mean, that's only the same as the originals though, isn't it?
Yeah, like, exactly. And you know, we had an interesting conversation about so the guys were talking to Yoshi a bit. We were down for Yoshi Kagami, the boss president, was talking a bit about capacitors and how capacitors are made and how the size and the placement of capacitors on a circuit board make a difference. Got into how I was interested to know their thought of, and I don't know if you guys have ever heard this, but I can't remember who it was that said it originally, but the size of the enclosure of a fuzz face makes difference to the way it sounds.
Yeah, there is something about this because, and I remember people kicking off about it when the fuzz face minis came out. There was, but it wasn't just that. There was also because there's a couple of examples. It was the same thing that people complained about having the. Sorry, I'm totally tripping over my words here. Let me hold fire and start again. The other thing that people complained about was the fact that it had the minis had a 9-volt input.
Yeah.
Which again also was something that people kicked off about. And I kind of never really held a huge amount of stock in that until we compared a Big Muff and a Big Muff Mini, and they do sound completely different.
Yeah.
And you know, you think about all of those big those sort of OG fuzz units. Like, look at you know, all the old fuzz pedals, all the tone beddings and stuff like that. They're all massive.
Yeah, yeah. It's something to do with, and this is ridiculous, but it's something to do with two things: the way the circuit board is actually constructed and how the components sit next to each other. But yeah, how much physical like
space,
stuff, air, space,
yeah,
between. And I was having a conversation with. Briefly with Adrian Thorpe from Thorpey Effects, because he's very kindly retuned my Deluxe Memory Man because it's got a couple of analog chips in it and he said they were slightly out of sync, which is why the repeats were distorting. And he was like, the problem is those old Electro-Monix pedals are built so badly and they're so unreliable, but the way that they're built and the way the circuit board is constructed and the way they're laid out is part of the sound. And actually, when you refine that and you modernize it, it does change the way they sound and it does change the way they feel. And it's like you say, when we put those two Big Muffs together, because you play a normal one, a nano one, on its own, you're like, that sounds great. And then you plug in the other one and you're like, that sounds great. And it's not until you A-B the two that you're like, right, now I understand why that one sounds better than that. You know, you can actually really hear that difference.
That is the bizarrest thing to make a difference.
Yeah, I know. You know, I think this is the thing, as we were talking a bit about the old tone benders, and Mercari still owned the rights to make the old tone benders. They made them.
Well, that's right. Was it you and me, Matt, who bumped into?
Oh,
was it you and me, Jay?
Yeah.
But they've retooled.
Anthony Mercari.
That's right. Yeah, because they've just released a book on.
They have, yeah. I was looking at it. It looks amazing. Oh. It's quite expensive.
I wanted to, but I was going to buy the book until I realised. I think it was it £70?
£75, yeah. Maybe
I was going to buy it then and there, but then I was like,
it's quite a lot of money, but maybe we should.
It's definitely worth it. I just didn't have £75 on me.
It really looked amazing. It really, really looked amazing. Yeah. It might be the sort of thing that we should buy for guitar nerds, so that, you know, because it looks cool when it, and I think it's really great to be able to like support a company like that that's been doing the same thing for so long. But yeah, really, really interesting. Very interesting.
It's basically, they were saying that they've retooled certain machines to print, you know, manufacture the boxes in the same way. And he's like, there's like six components, but he's like, the layout and the way that they're on the board, the way the board is constructed and everything is wired is, you know, there's real fanatics that say that it's got to be the way it is. And, you know, small changes can drastically change the way those pedals sound.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, it was quite interesting to sort of delve into that. And that Eric Johnson one's quite a unique fuzz face because it really cleans up a lot more than a lot of the other fuzz faces, especially on like a Strat and stuff.
Really? That's interesting.
And he picked it up for an absolute bargain. I think he paid £100 for it. And they were quite expensive at the time, I think.
Cool, awesome.
So yeah, it was a good trip. We picked up saw some cool stuff. I nearly bought an old JC20, which is the tiny little.
Haven't you got one of those?
No, I had a 50.
You got rid of the 50.
Yeah, because it was just.
You got rid of the 50 without telling me that you were getting rid of the 50.
It's all right, you can pick them up on eBay for like next to no money. They're not worth anything. But I nearly bought a 20, and I was like, I can't be bothered to deal with a transformer when I get back. But they're made.
Yeah, because
they're
100. Are they 110?
There were 100, yeah. 100, actually.
Okay.
Yeah. Bizarrely enough, they're made in Italy, Or they were made what? In Italy. Yeah. Need to speak to my people about that one. But yeah, for some reason, those ones all are stamped made in Italy in the back.
Bizarre.
So
bizarre.
I don't know if there was a run of JCs at one point that were Italian made. So maybe someone knows a little bit more about it. But yeah.
Italian. Well, listener, JC. if you know more, yeah, let us know. Why were the JC20s made in Italy? Jay Cross.
Hello.
Jay Cross, this week you went to the shop that I work at whilst I was away in Spain because we were hosting.
Yeah, the timing was fantastic.
Yes, I imagine it was. You went to an Earthquake Advices event that we were hosting.
I did, yeah. It was really good, actually. Earthquake Advices were there with Corey Juba, who is... I'd not heard of him before, but from what I gather, from what he was saying, he's kind of involved in the development and the sort of production of the Earthquaker pedals. Really, really, really interesting guy. I thought the demo was really cool. He was by no means... a shredder. He was by no means like a flashy guitar player. He was just a cool, solid guitar player. Like, he played guitar how most of the people at that event probably were able to play guitar, as opposed to when you go to a lot of these events where they've got, you know, like when we had Ola England in the shop, and it's just like, well, like, I'm never gonna be able to make anything sound like that. Whereas what Corey was playing was really, really cool. Like, he went through a load of the pedals, didn't have everything obviously because there's so many pedals, but went through, and the thing that really impressed me was he made the and Joe, please hold yourself together as I say this. Okay. He made the Rainbow Machine sound usable. it was crazy. Even even the Data Corruptor. He even managed to make the Data Corruptor sound usable.
The Data Corruptor is usable. I made a board that included it recently, and all you have to do is like shut down a couple of the
turn
crazier
it off,
things.
Like...
but it can
all
be,
you have to do, all you have to do, yeah, is you turn it round so it's facing the audience, and then people can just look at it, and it's fine.
Yeah, okay. No, but it can be a really functional ring modulator, and actually, the Rainbow Machine being usable, that's one of Nick Reinhardt's sort of big things. He uses the Rainbow Machine.
Yeah, but like, what, come on, you've heard Terramelos, like.
Yes, you're right. And occasionally he uses it for crazy things, but mostly his crazy sounds come from other pedals he uses, or he widely cites on a lot of his videos where people ask him about it, because I think he's become quite synonymous with the pedal. If you ask him about the Rainbow Machine, he uses it as a chorus. He shuts down a bulk of the controls and uses
that
it as
sense.
A subtle chorus for things. And it sounds fantastic for that. Seems like a waste, but sounds great.
Well, I mean, I thought that some of the stuff sounded great. There was a couple of pedals there that I haven't had a chance to try.
Of course, the new vibrato, tremolo, the new tremolo.
The aqueduct.
Yes, yeah,
no,
the aqueduct.
It's a vibrato.
Aqueduct. Okay. The aqueduct I thought sounded great, but the pedal that really impressed me, which I haven't spent a huge amount of time with, because it's a stereo flanging device, is the Pyramids.
Yeah, the Pyramids.
I tell you what, the Pyramids sounded absolutely incredible, and by the end of the day, I was like, I think I need to buy one of these. It sounded so good, and it was like really, really malleable. Like super tameable, but you could also do all of that crazy stuff with it if you wanted. And it had a I think it was on the Pyramids. I'm sure it was on the Pyramids. It had a Shepherdtone style effect on there, which was really, really nice, and obviously something that we've been talking about a lot recently. I thought the Pyramid sounded really good, and also something that I don't really consider particularly Earthquaker was the Westwood, which is like quite a transparent drive pedal, and I thought that that was like really, really nice. Like, it was cool to hear something quite subtle from Earthquaker. So yeah, some great stuff there. He teased some features that they've got coming out over the next on some of their pedals over the next few months, which he asked us not to talk about, so I will not. But if anybody went to any of the shows, I'm sure that you'll have heard the same thing. But what I really liked about it was they've got on most of the pedals now, and I think this is something that's probably going to roll out as a number of these pedals become, you know, move into their sort of V2s, is a lot of them have got these soft switches, and I can't remember what the did I make a note of it? There's like a proper, they've given a proper name to whatever they're calling their soft switch, which was the flex switch. That was it. The flex switch, which is basically like you can use the you can use any of the switches like a momentary control.
Same thing as the Spark Mini, right?
Yeah,
so
you hold it down.
If you hold it down, it's momentary boost. If you tap
exactly,
it,
exactly,
off,
and yeah. same as what you get on the on like the TC pedals as well.
Yeah,
but obviously
that's the advantage of using an FET
exactly
switch.
Yeah,
basically.
Exactly. So yeah, some really, really cool stuff. So it was really interesting. I had a really good time, and it was like stepping back in time to it was really nice to go to. I tell you what was really nice. It was really nice to go to one of those events at GAC, and then when it was finished, not have to pack up all the chairs because I just went to the pub. So that was really, really cool. But yeah, some great stuff from Earthquaker. They seem to have kind of quietened down a little bit from, you know, how things were maybe a couple of years ago, where it felt like there was just pedal after pedal after pedal.
I mean, they make 50 pedals now.
I know, yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's very impressive. And actually, listener, if you haven't already seen this, now we've spoken about this before on the podcast, but there is an absolutely fantastic Earthquaker Devices documentary that you can watch on YouTube. I think it's either on Earthquaker Devices' own YouTube channel, and it's also on Knob's YouTube channel, which if you don't follow, you should absolutely follow. Fantastic pedal reviews from those guys.
Knob's do the best guitar pedal demos.
Absolutely, best, yeah.
But nobody comes close as far as I'm concerned.
Exactly. Yeah. We honestly thought about doing it for a while, and then saw the Knob's videos and thought, nah, there's no point. No, yeah. There's nothing better than this.
Talking of Knob's, I was that YouTube channel. I haven't had a chance to catch up on the podcast. Did you guys talk about the Enzo last week?
Yeah.
We didn't. Do you remember? It was in the news, and then we didn't get
around to it. And you wouldn't let me talk about it. That's right.
Because we would have rushed it. But do you know what? We didn't include it in this week. So we should. Yeah, we will. But let's talk about it now before we start the official news, because it's not actually news, because everyone will kind of know about
everyone
it. But we should talk about the Enzo. Matt Knight, talk about the Enzo.
It blew my mind.
So this is the Meris.
This is the Meris.
So yeah, Meris are responsible for the what was their reverb called? The Mercury
7.
7.
And the Polymoon delay.
And the Otobit Junior.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So this is only their fourth pedal.
And yeah, but I guess like this, the Mercury, what do we say, 7? The Mercury 7,
yeah,
is one of the most sort of ethereal reverb pedals you will ever hear. The Otobit Junior is an absolutely ridiculous, I think it's 8 or it might be 6-step
sequencer.
Sort of note sequencer, or incredible sort of ring modulator, just the most versatility and flexibility on a weird sounding pedal that I've ever seen. And then the what was it called, the Polymoon, is absolutely, you know, one of the craziest sort of soundscape pedals.
Every time they have
a fantastic track record for this.
Every time they release a pedal, people go absolutely bananas for it, and quite rightly. In the Enzo doesn't appear to be any different.
So Matt Knight, talk to us about the Enzo.
So for people who don't know a little bit of the background, this guy was a DSP engineer at Line 6, and he helped develop the FM4. So he's had great experience in doing synth pedals. I mean, the FM4 has some of the most classic pedal synth sounds ever created. And when he moved over, he's obviously used all his DSP programming into the other things that we've seen so far. But the Enzo, when I first heard it, I didn't actually believe what I was hearing came out of that pedal. So it's a polyphonic or monophonic synthesizer, but it has a proper ADSR style filter in it, so you can get that proper attack, sustain and release like you would on a proper synthesizer with pitch shifting, and you can get infinite notes. You've got a sequencer on there which also works polyphonically. It sounds like the 80s, the modern day 80s revival synthwave stuff. So if you want to do
Stranger Things
or
Drive. You
know, yeah, basically anything that you hear in modern music today that's trying to be that 80s style thing. I mean, to me, there was a couple of pad sounds that sounded just like a Juno, and I was like, they've just got the attack and that filter section just right. And that's what makes the big difference, because on a keyboard, obviously you can control the attack when you hit the note. You can control how long it takes for the note to get to a certain point, and then how long it takes to sustain to that point, and then how long it takes to release, because it's done in an analog or digital way with a key press. But it's difficult to do it with the guitar because there's too many variables when it comes to the way you hit your string or how you mute a string or anything like that. So sure, to build that into this system is just a work of art, I think. And that pedal, and I mean, you know, that pedal zone did a video on it and just had it sounding, you know, great. It was just like, yeah. I think for synth, this is like a step forward in easy to use, enjoyable, fun synthesis for guitar players. Because I think so many guitar players, myself included, want to do that synth thing.
Totally.
You know, especially if you're sitting at home and you're just playing with a looper and you want to do something a bit different that's not turn reverb decay up to 12 seconds and turn the effects level up to 100 and do some sort of like echoey synth, you know, reverb thing. This is like allows you to create a whole new sort of textural palette, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah. I think Nick Reinhardt and Juan Aldrete also managed to put out a pretty impressive video on the pedal as well. And, of course, their playing styles are just so well suited to synth stuff.
And I was just double-checking on the website because I didn't see MIDI on the back, but you can actually do MIDI over TRS, which is quite good, because the biggest thing with this pedal is like, do you remember we've mentioned it a few weeks ago about the Flashback being a great pedal, but the problem is it's got too many sounds on it, and the pedal with too many great sounds can also be annoying because you've got no way of changing those sounds.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I've seen everyone use this with the Meris 4-button foot switch. And I was like, I'm sure it's got to have some sort of MIDI capability, because I want to flick between presets over MIDI. But yeah, you can do it over TRS, which I think is great. I just think as a pedal, I don't think there's anything that comes close. I mean, I know Boss make SY300, but it's
like 5 years old though.
No, like three or four years old.
Okay, yeah.
But it's more money. It does a lot more, but it's a lot more of a deep dive product.
Yeah.
And the thing that I really like about the Enzo is that it's just, you turn it on, and there's a great sound in it straight away. You know, the SY300 is much more like a synthesizer, an actual synthesizer for guitar players that you need to program, where this is much more like a great set of synth patches that just sound good as soon as you turn it on, like the FM4, like the DL4, like most of that 4 series. It's like every one of those controls. It's just...
It's not cheap, though.
When it's $300, $350.
Yeah, I mean, I realise that that's kind of the price of these things, but it's still a
I mean,
lot
that's
money,
becoming the new standard, isn't
sure,
it? Really?
Sure.
In terms of pricing, it's just like $300. You know, and we were talking in Japan, we were talking about the Van Wilden Overdrive that I remember we had at Anderton's, which was £600.
And oh, that's crazy.
By the time I'd left,
we'd still sold, hadn't it?
We
sold loads of them.
Absolute. You know, an absolute bunch of them, like more than I would have ever thought we'd have sold a 600 pedal for £600.
Yeah, I think I remember when that happened, and I thought that was a bad decision, and I was completely proved wrong.
Yeah, it's totally crazy, but you know, I think. It was a great sounding pedal. I think for someone who wants to do something a little bit different, and for me, the sequencer was like, that's a great sounding sequencer.
Yeah. So before we move too far away from...
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Synth pedals, that is an excellent segue for me to talk about something that we spoke about on last week's podcast when I started banging on about the Line 6 Helix 3-note generator system. Which, Matt, are you familiar with this system? Should I bring you up to speed quickly?
Yeah, bring me up to speed.
So this is, well, okay, so here's the scenario. The only reason I'm mentioning this is because on the previous week's podcast, I went on about this new feature I found on the Helix, which I thought was the most incredible thing. I can't believe how awesome this feature is. And we're very fortunate on the Guitar Nerds Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/Guitar Nerds Forum, to have Ben Adrian on the group, who is one of the Line 6 designers. And as it turns out, I cited Moog Gravit, a podcast listener who is our sort of resident Helix expert, to sort of say, you know, has he had much experience with this? Because I felt like I was just scratching the surface last week, as I'd only recently discovered it. Ben Adrian from Line 6 chipped in on the Facebook thread to point out that he was actually responsible for the creation of this very patch, the Helix 3-note generator synth. Matt Knight allows you to assign. I can essentially assign an unlatched foot switch to a synth note, and I can assign the note that it is, and then name that patch appropriately. So have C, and then make another one that is D, and I can give myself, if I'm using the ordinary Helix or the Helix LT, I guess I can give myself eight notes. If I'm using the HXFX, I can give myself six notes on that patch that I can play as a synthesizer with my feet, or use as a drone knob, or as I was creating, to use as a replacement for bass foot pedals.
Okay, nice.
You know, like the sort of Nord MIDI things that they brought out, or the organ foot pedals that you'd see being used by people like Chris Squire in the band Yes, but it's just having that, the fact that you can turn a Line 6 Helix into a synthesizer for your feet is one of the most incredible things I've ever seen, one of the most amazing features I've ever seen on a pedal. And there are certainly, because it's quite a new update, there are quite a few, and a couple of people shared on the group some videos on YouTube of people using this system whilst playing guitar simultaneously, and it's very impressive. I'll read you a bit of what Ben said about this, and I love how organically this came to be. Ben says, one day I was thinking of the band Spacemen 3 and how they used to use Vox guitars with a built-in tuner that just droned an E note. They'd just leave the tuner on for the whole song as part of the music. I had a little burst of inspiration and realized that we had synth oscillators built into the Helix DSP tools that I could use for whatever. So I ran down to my office, and in about an hour I'd mocked up a single note drone effect. By the next day I had two effects built, a frequency-based generator and a note letter-based generator. At the same time, we realized that we could assign the effects to momentary switches and make faux bass pedals, or we could have a snapshot jump between note values. In short, there are a lot of possibilities for a person with a limber brain. But I just thought, what an amazing thing to come up with, and what a fantastic new sort of leap for digital pedals, which of course can be constantly updated and continue to progress and become better and better. Go on.
No, I was that's really, it's a really interesting idea.
Yeah,
about how that all works.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's totally wicked. In other news for me this week, I think it's new guitar time.
What?
But I'm really into hollow bodies at the moment, and
you've got a hollow body.
I have three.
Oh, a different one. You want a different one?
But no.
But how much is that Gibson you bought?
Like $4,000.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Fine. Okay. Cool.
But no. I want a thinner one. I want a 335 or something.
You want a 125T. That's the one. That's the one you want.
Is it? Is that
that's
the one
thin one with the P90 in the neck only?
Yeah, that sounds
absolutely wicked.
That sounds very cool. See, I was thinking of losing one of my Strats and getting a 330. But
okay.
Interestingly enough, last year, Gibson Memphis put out a limited run of ES-330s in satin with humbuckers and dot inlays. Oh. Still with the tailpiece, but in like a satin walnut finish with no plate. It's kind of like a modern traditional 330. It's like absolutely completely unique. I'm thinking about getting a 330. Matt and Jay, have you owned hollow bodies? Recommendations?
No, it's the only one. It's the only type of guitar I don't think I've ever owned.
Why not?
I just haven't had the money when one's come up. Actually, my dream would be to have a 330, I think.
With P90s, though?
That we had... they have the 330s.
330s normally P90s and a tailpiece.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so I'd rather have that. But there was a guitar once, and I don't know, Jay, maybe you remember this. There was a custom shop, 59335 in T-Burst. That was a custom... It was a custom shop Gibson that was built in the Nashville factory, not in the Memphis factory.
Right.
And it was... I think it was about $3,500, and it was probably the best 335 I've ever played. You know, when you pick up a guitar and just like everything just feels right, resonates right, neck feels right. It had like a massive, chunky, like 59 neck on it. And I was like, man, that guitar was just absolutely perfect. But I love the way that 330s for me play acoustically. like just unplugged. I think they feel really nice. I like not having the center block in there.
Yeah.
But you can get some great secondhand ones for not a lot of money. Like the 125 T's aren't too much money. Some of those sort of odd arch tops from the 60s. A lot of the student arch tops and things like that are cool amps. But yeah, I've just not got around to owning one. I'd love a Gretsch as well, but you know, it's just a case of when and where, I guess.
Yeah. So of course, you owned a what did you own? You owned a big old body Gretsch, didn't you, for a short time?
I did. Yeah, actually, it was for quite a while. I got it when I was I got it in 2004, so I would have been 17 probably.
Right.
And I sold it. I ended up selling it to Joss Allen, actually. Probably, I don't know, 2010, something like that. So I had it for quite a while, and I liked it. It wasn't really for me, to be honest with you. Like, yeah, I was 17. I bought it because I went into GAC, and what I'd gone into GAC to buy was a Telecaster, and the salesperson tricked me into buying a Gretsch that they had, that was an X-Display Gretsch, and I vowed that I would never, ever talk to this salesperson ever again, and then me and Mark Packham became very good friends, and the rest is history. But yeah, basically Mark tricked me into buying a guitar that they had, X-Demo, because I was sort of young and naive and wasn't really sure what was going on. Totally, totally. No. That's not completely true. No, we were already friends at that point. I went in to buy a Gretsch I went in to buy a Tele, and I got a Gretsch, I made a mistake, not a mistake, because I played it. I was playing in a ska band at the time, and it sounded great for what I was using it for. But it never really felt proper for me. So I ended up I sold it and got a Tele and stuff. But I would say that if I was going to get if I was going to get a hollow body now, I'd either go 69 Tele, 69 thin line Tele, which I really like, or this is a lot more money, but CS336, it's a 339 shape, so it's a smaller body, but it's a one piece back center block and sides, so it's carved from a single piece of mahogany. They sound amazing. They sound absolutely incredible. So resonant, so ringy. They're really, really incredible. But of course, because it's made of one huge piece of wood, they do tend to be fairly expensive.
Yeah, you can pick one up at the moment for £3,000.
Oh, that's not so bad. Obviously £3,000 is a lot of money, but it's like I was expecting it to be more than that, considering, yeah.
Yeah, that's part of the 2017 Custom Shop range out of Memphis. But yeah, that's not. I mean, considering we're talking about the Gibson Memphis Custom Shop here, I think that £2,999 is not too bad at all.
Yeah, they're really, really nice. I've always preferred a 339 to a 335. 335 can just be a little bit too big and unwieldy for me, which I think again is part of the reason why I didn't really get on with the Gretsch in the end. I just wanted something, despite being quite a big person, but it just felt too big to me. And also I think that's a reason why I've never really got on with acoustic guitars. I just want something slim and something easy to play. The 336 is such a great model, and it's a shame they don't do more of them. So have you got one in GAC at the moment then? Is that what you're saying?
We don't know. We do not. We do not. It's at a competitor's. Oh. I know there is a 336 at the moment.
Oh, well, thanks for, thanks. I'll check it out.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, we are like three quarters way through the podcast. We should definitely dip into some news, because whilst there aren't actually that many new things that have come out at the moment, there are some really super cool things.
You do have a 336 in stock.
Do we?
You do have a CS336. Yeah, you've got a really nice looking one. It's in TV white.
I am fantastic. fantastic.
Look, I tell you what, that looks absolutely incredible.
Well, I'll do you a deal. How much are we doing it for?
Well, how much are you going to do it for me for? And then I'll tell you. 400 quid?
Sounds great.
Yeah, okay,
sounds
cool. Great. Cool. If you don't mind paying for it for me up front, I'll sort it out later. Yeah,
that's fine. You just make sure it's cash in hand and it will be at your house tomorrow. anyway, let's do some news.
News.
Matt Knight. First,
I've never heard the news jingle. I've never listened back. I've got absolutely no idea what it sounds like.
I change it every now and again. I've settled for one recently, but only because I just haven't had the time to record a slightly different one. I mean, to make more.
I also just quickly looked on the GAC website, and you've still got that absolutely wicked 330 with a Bigsby in white, which is the signature one. That's such a great guitar.
I am very well aware of that. What's the signature fella's name?
I can't remember. He's a Japanese guitarist that plays
It's a Japanese guitar player. Such a shame that we still have that, because I think we got that guitar when both of you were working.
No, I wasn't.
No?
No.
You weren't there, but I think
Tameo Okuda.
Yeah, and it's such fantastic guitar.
That's pretty cheap.
Yeah, it's a good price. It's a great guitar. It's just looking for the right owner, I guess. I guess a white 330 isn't necessarily everyone's cup of tea, but it is an absolutely fantastic guitar. Matt Knight, Epiphone. Speaking of Gibson, Epiphone have released a signature model, and as they continue to flog the dead to dying horse that is Slash, what has he got now?
So limited edition Slash Firebird premium outfit and limited edition standard outfit. Where is the top hat? That's what I want to know. No free top hat with this one. Basically a Epiphone Firebird with Slash Alnico pickups comes in two variants. So the premium outfit is limited to 100 numbered and signed by Slash. Slash's first signature Firebird. He's had everything else, but he hasn't had a Firebird. AAA flame maple top, mahogany body, Slash open coil. Now, they say Seymour Duncan...
Now, that's the interesting thing, is that flame maple top on a Firebird.
Some Firebirds do normally come... You can get some with a flame maple top. I don't think it's got to be a veneer for that, obviously, for that money. I actually like the article that I found on here, the web goes... Epiphone unleashes Slash Firebird. Guns N' Roses frontman gets new mid-price signature guitar. And then at the bottom it says, there's no word on RRP yet. So how do you know it's a mid-price guitar? I guess you're thinking, well, I think rumours are it's going to be $899.
Sounds about right.
The first 100 have probably already sold. So if you're listening to this on the Wednesday... which is a day later than we usually do, you've probably missed out unless you've already ordered one, because there are Slash fanatics out there who have already doubled the value of this guitar. I wouldn't be surprised if they turned up on Reverb for well over 1,500 within a week or so. The standard version, basically you get all the same things, but you just don't get the signature, you don't get the hard case and the strap. You just get a little certificate.
So didn't we talk about one of these last week? Was it who was it? I've already forgotten. Somebody last week had an Epiphone signature guitar come out, and it was exactly the same as this, like 100 limited ones. And then, who was it? It's not Jeff Lynne, but it's someone like that, isn't it? Sorry, I can't remember. I'll have to have a look. But this seems to be a new thing for Epiphone, is that they are doing, you know, something like this
They did it on the Bomber Masters.
Peter
more
Frampton,
popular.
That was it. It was last week. It was Peter Frampton had a released exactly the same sort of thing. 100 limited ones, and then however many to follow. So this is something that they appear to be doing. I guess it's I guess it's just a way to sort of generate a bit more interest in the Epiphone brand.
I want to know
what
happens if he sneezes during the signature and totally scuffs it up. What do they do? Do they refinish that guitar? Or
do they make a new one? Do you think they have spares in case he messes up a signature?
Well, the thing is, I guess they're making 900, and the only difference is that it's the signature and the strap and the case that it comes in. So, I guess he's got a lot of practice for that. But his signature does look like it says slush. So, in fact, worse than that, it looks like S-L-U-C-A, Sluka number one. These guitars are already sold. I think you'll find a few left in the 900 of the standard ones.
And do you know what? If you don't like Slash, it's still a fantastic guitar. The only thing that you might have to get your head around is, of course, they have replaced the Firebird logo on the scratch plate with Slash's skull.
I would say if you're a Guns N' Roses fan, probably a nice collectible piece to have.
Yeah.
Guitar will be average to good. I don't think it's going to be mind-blowing, but a lot of people go to Firebird and go, why is the guitar so long? And that's always the biggest thing with those. Ferro fretboard, which is worth noting as well. No rosewood.
Sorry, did one of you just say that this is Slash's first Firebird?
Yes.
Matt, you said that, isn't it?
He's had a Gibson.
He has, yeah. Do you remember? I think it was maybe, I'm just trying to find some info on it, maybe a year ago, he announced, there was two. There was one that looked like this, that was like a trans black, and one that was like an Alpine, like a TV white, I guess. And they looked amazing, but they were ridiculous money, like $8,000 or something. I can't remember exactly.
They did. Maybe they're thinking
pound the internet for it.
Yeah, maybe they're thinking of just an Epiphone one, but it was crazy quilt top, basically the Gibson version of this. And yes, they were making money. There was only 25 of those guitars.
Oh, right, okay. There you go. So, really interesting.
Jay Cross, Outlaw Effects have finally launched their Nomad pedal boards. Now, we spoke about these quite some time ago. We spoke about these after NAMM, but their official release, you can actually buy these pedal boards now.
So really, really exciting. Maybe the most interesting thing that I saw at NAMM. I think me and Matt and a colleague of mine, Matt, were walking around and we bumped into Outlaw Effects and they were also exhibiting a couple of the others, the Animals pedal and who was the other the pedal board management company, not Ground Control, but something like that, wasn't it?
No, it was Ground Control.
Was it Ground Control? Yeah, it was Ground Control. I thought the Nomad was fantastic. So they do two pedal boards, the S128 and the M128, which are $160 and $180 respectively. Fairly compact pedal boards that are designed to hold the Outlaw pedals, which are similar to the to Moore style chassis, and the pedal board is completely lithium ion powered, so you charge it up and then the power outputs are actually built into the back of the pedal board. Well, they're actually built into the pedal board itself, so you don't need to take a power supply out with you. It's very similar to what Pedal Train were doing with the Volto just 5 years ago or whatever, but Outlaw have kind of combined the two Pedal Train products into this really, really neat little feature.
At a fantastic price as
at
well.
At a really, really competitive price, I think. I think this is one of maybe my favourite thing that I saw at NAMM that I didn't know about before. It's so interesting. It's nearly 13,000 milliamps of power. So you've got loads and loads of power in there to power all sorts of stuff. You do have a couple of voltage options. So there's a couple of 12 volts, one 18 or 24 volt, and then seven nines. And I thought it was a really, really great little unit. And they did say that it wasn't available at the time, so I'm glad that it is now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, now I think another thing that's just worth noting is the serial numbers on these, or the product numbers on these. You've got the S128 and the M128, which suggests to me that it won't be long before we see an L or an XL128, which will likely be larger versions of these.
Yes, that would be far more appealing to me. But yes. But yes, they do seem like fantastic solutions.
Yeah, very
for people
cool
with smaller boards, and certainly just making everything all built in. You know, no one wants to spend money on a separate power supply. Why not build it into a pedal board? A fantastic idea indeed. OD Guitars have unveiled the Minerva, which is a new model for them. You might not be familiar with OD Guitars. They're not one of the sort of larger names in guitars. They're an Israeli guitar company who specialize in modern guitars, and this certainly is an extremely modern instrument. This is their foray into headless instruments, both headless and fan fretted, so following the line of Strandberg and Ormsby and Kiesel along that sort of path. This is their headless model, so available in 6, 7 or 8 string. It is absolutely jam-packed with features. You know, it comes with your pre-built with bare knuckle humbuckers, with those wonderful like monorail bridge tuners, and they have that fantastic burst that I think Ibanez really popularized, where everything's sported and it's moving from a natural color into a blue, which looks great if you're into modern stuff. I really think that I love the shape on this guitar. It's fantastically modern, but there is one thing about OD guitars that makes them extremely unique. And can you see Jay and Matt? Are you guys aware of this on OD guitars?
I'm just having a look now.
So if you look at, and this is something that's universal across all of OD guitars, if you look at the front of the guitar, it has a chamber across, but not an F hole or anything like that. It's kind of like a sort of lots of individual holes, like a network.
It looks like an ant's nest or something like that.
Absolutely,
a termite like that. Nest.
So that is a concept which OD guitars refer to as natural geometric chambering. I'm going to read what they've written on the website about it, because it's absolutely fascinating. There's a mathematical precision to this chambering. So the fellow Omer who heads up this company says, ever since he was a child, he's been fascinated by nature's own mathematics. And he didn't see it at the time, but it was always there. And of course, he's not creating or discovering anything new here. It's always been known that nature has its own order in chaos. But he's come to find that his interest in sonics lies within nature's mathematics, the golden ratio, the sacred geometry, fractal, etc. And he says, I decided to look further down the rabbit hole and see where it goes. It was there that I started designing using the help of those shapes and mathematical rules, which in some way led me to combining them with the traditional methods of guitar building and design within the surface of guitar. I've also come to find that those shapes of chambering, like the Nautilus chambers, change the tone of the guitar, and I can control the way bass and treble are affected by it. These geometric patterns are all created by using CAD software and are calculated in a way that expresses nature's natural geometric. It's a progressive thinking and experimenting with those patterns. Therefore, I have a lot of testing and discovering ahead of me in order to reveal new options for my future designs. But it's just something that I wrote off as being a very, very sort of modern, sort of showy offy, looky sort of thing to add to a guitar is actually a sort of mathematically designed tone shaping for the instrument. I just think that's completely unique and really interesting.
Yeah, I guess it comes down to what we're saying about pedals with components and how they're placed. I guess, you know, there's so many minor things that can make a guitar sound totally different.
Yeah, absolutely. Now these guitars come with with a price point reflective of that. So the new Minervas, the base model starts at $3,500. So they're pretty top end, but they're all built to order and are completely customizable. So they're what an absolutely cool modern guitar. I really love sort of the story behind that.
I'd love to try one. They look wicked.
Yeah, absolutely. They certainly do.
Can I just say something that I've just had a quick look at their spec, online spec builder or whatever. And one thing that I'm really, really glad about is after talking about all of the intricacies of the geometry in the design, you can only get passive pickups with this guitar. I thought it would have been absolutely hilarious after all of that. There'd been some MG81s or 85s in there. Do you know what I mean?
Like, pickups that cut all the dynamics out.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But no, it is only, in fact, the only thing that they're offering are bare knuckles. So they must have found something that works very specifically for these guitars. But yeah, very, very interesting. So if they're saying that they use CNCs, so it's there must be.
I mean, that's got to be the only way to do that. I'm sure.
Yeah, well, the only other thing I was thinking is I was wondering if it was maybe 3D printed or something. You know, if it was a sort of not made of wood, but that obviously is not the case. So yeah, really interesting. A cool concept. I don't mean to sound like a total bore, but the shape is a bit of a hard pass for me. But well, I do
on the Minerva. There is a telly. There, sure. They do a telly.
Yeah. I was having a look at it, and you know that. So there's some cool stuff there. I really think that the concept is very interesting though. So I'm keen to keep my eye out and see what they do.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that pretty much brings us to the close of this week's podcast here over on the regular podcast. That is, we will be continuing over on the Patreon episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast, where from as little as $1 a month you can support the Guitar Nerds podcast. $1 a month gets you the regular episode ad free and early sometimes. $5 a month gets you an extra half an hour every week, plus access to bonus features and mini series such as Branton's Ranton. And $10 a month makes you one of our executive backers, granting you access to everything already mentioned, plus the prestigious honour of having your name read out in one breath by me.
Hang on, I've got a thing.
Are you ready?
Wait. Where is it?
Come on.
Yeah, come on. I know.
I'm going to start.
I'm not sure.
I'm going to breathe in.
All right,
I'm going. Adrian Day, Ken Sayers, Matthew King, Ethan Jebediah Bartier, Steve Conrady, Scott Hamilton, Ivor John Mayercross, Marin Peters, Golden G, Richard III, Sean Arvo, Joshua Mitchell, Chris Wolfman, Chuffinson, Ryan McDermott, Robert Cousins, Rob Gruhl, Nate Nagel, Tucker Amadon, Ernie Cooper, Emily J. Baker, Christopher Rapsiv, Zane Over, Matt Roberts, Dave Lee, Derek Pitts, Martin Cliff, Matt Davis, Aaron Sarin, Blake Weiland, Jake Gray, Crystal Losek, Ron Currier, Scott Kennedy, Robin Smith, Rob Nordwick, Rob Grant, Derek Rich, Chris Connors, Andy Joyce, Carlos Manta, Steve Michael, Blair Toms, Mark Cross, Brad Page, Jenny Short, Andy McKenzie, Laurie Anstis, Paul Corrigan, Will Clare, Scott O'Brien, Phil Thompson, Moo Gravett, Colin Anderson.
Did you not do it?
No, I did. Of course. Oh, okay. I did. Were you not listening?
I was playing my Electro-Harmonics mini synth on my iPad.
Yes. Now I did successfully finish it, but I tell you what, it is absolutely getting close. I am scared. So if you want to hear the audio of me passing out on the podcast, do subscribe to the top tier of our Patreon backerness. But there you have it. You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Guitar Nerds, or on YouTube at Guitar Nerds Videos. You can even visit our website, guitarnerds.net, where all our various channels are displayed in all of their glory. And you can even even purchase Guitar Nerds merchandise and become a true member of the club. That is it from us this week. We'll catch you next time for some more guitar nerdery. Farewell.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Summer's just around the corner, so give your body the care it deserves with Osea's best-selling Andaria Algae Body Oil. Created by infusing Andaria seaweed in barrels of botanical oils, it leaves skin silky soft and glowing. Plus, it's clinically proven to improve elasticity and deeply moisturize without feeling greasy. It's safe, clean, vegan skincare. Get 10% off your first order at OseaMalibu.com with code GLOW, plus free shipping on orders over $60.